Welcome back, everyone, to the channel. Tonight's video, I am bringing you two horrifying cryptid hunting stories. It's going to be a wild night. So sit back, relax, dim those lights, and let's get spooky. Last summer, my younger sister went missing on a camping trip with friends. She had just turned 20, and we had started to drift away from each other. I had gotten busy focusing on my own life. I left the country for a new job. When I came back at Christmas, I found out she had gone missing. It explained why she hadn't been answering my messages. I didn't understand why no one contacted me about her disappearance. The police claimed to not have my new number and didn't have access to her phone. I was certain her friends didn't want me knowing because they had time getting their story straight. I asked for leave from work to track down those four friends. They all claimed that she had gotten up in the middle of the night to go to the washroom, and no one noticed that she hadn't come back until the morning. I didn't buy it. They all said a slightly different story location from where they had camped that night. None of them gave corroborating details about the campsite. One said they used logs for seats. Another said the entire area was clear. They were lying where they had set up camp, and it caused the search team to be looking in the wrong place. I passed along the information, but since it was still winter, the rangers couldn't search the forest. They promised when the weather got better, they would try looking in the other popular camping areas in case the four just got confused. Her friends smartened up and refused to speak with me. Threats of lawyers started. I couldn't do anything else but go back to work and wait until spring. I got a call at work that she had been found. Well, parts of her had been found. A man who had been panning for gold found some finger bones in a river. Soon, with more people going into the forest for the season, more pieces started to be discovered. In total, half her skull, some ribs, and the finger bones were discovered. There had been some large bones they hadn't yet been fully tested to find out if they were hers. It may sound gruesome, but I demanded photos of each piece found. I felt as if the police weren't doing their job. They closed the case saying that she had gotten lost. They claimed the damage to the skull could have happened after death. After I saw a photo of the femur, I doubted that fact. The marrow had been scraped out. There also were scratches on the bone the police said could have been made by animals. It did appear to have been gnawed on, but not by sharp teeth. Our parents died when I was 17 and she was 14. When it happened, I promised to take care of her. I failed her. I assumed since she became an adult, I was no longer needed. I was wrong. If I couldn't save her, the least I could do was find out what happened. Too many things weren't adding up. I quit my job even though my boss said I could come back anytime. He's lost a child, so he understood how grief worked. I did some research and packed what was needed. Then I drove to a small town by the forest looking for answers. I questioned some of the local shop workers trying to find out what had happened before the group went into the woods. Apparently, my sister had become friends with those four locals she camped with. It was the first time they met in person but talked a lot online. I asked if there was a reason why they suddenly decided to go camping. Anyone I spoke with suddenly started to avert their eyes as if they knew more but didn't admit to it. There was an odd air about this town. Everyone appeared as if they were trying to cover up a darkness with fake smiles. After my short investigation, I headed over to the ranger station. I've spoken with them over the phone before, but I figured I would press my luck trying to get more information if they couldn't just hang up. Only two people were inside the small ranger station. An older man who was double my size, but I bet he was still fit enough to do his job. A younger woman who looked like she may have been his daughter walked around the desk to greet me. She was extra friendly and reminded me a little of my sister. I'm Dustin Hill. I've spoken to Ranger Dan before, I said, and her face dropped a little. Her smile was strained once she knew who I was. The other ranger didn't get up from his chair. His face was half hidden by a large local newspaper. He flipped the pages, trying to ignore me. I have no news for you, he said, not even looking up. I wondered if he could feel my glare at the back of his head. The younger woman looked between us in distress, unsure of what to say. May I have a map of my sister's last location? I'm not from the area and I don't want to get lost. The old ranger sighed and stood up. He sorted through some papers and grabbed a trail map. At least he was patient, telling me which path to take and how long the hike would be. He had nothing personally against me. He just wished I'd accepted my sister was gone and there'd be nothing I could do about it. I refused to believe that fact. It had been a full season. I'm not sure what you think you might find, the female ranger said innocently. Anything, I told her and put away the map provided. I'll be staying in the forest for a while. Ranger Dan frowned. He crossed his arms, disapproving of my plan. Instead of trying to stop me, he gave me a single piece of advice. Bring a gun. I stopped at the doorway to let what he said sink in. Sure, there were bears in the area, but no one had been killed by one in over 5 years. I nodded silently, accepting the help. He must have some sort of unknown reason for acting so short with me. If I only knew what that was, I may be closer to finding out what happened to my sister. I would discover this town's secrets sooner than I thought. It was too late in the day to start at the campsite. I rented a motel room, planning to set out in the morning. After it got dark, I put on my jacket to go outside for a quick smoke. I'd been quitting off and on since my parents died. A figure pacing out by my window was also the reason why I decided to head outside. I startled the female ranger from earlier in the day. She had been trying to work up the courage to knock. She almost left when she saw me. It took her a moment to collect herself. It would be pointless going to that campsite, she told me. Is it because my sister was never there? I asked her. Her lips tightened, showing that was the truth. She chewed on the inside of her cheek, not wanting to continue speaking. Yes, I hated lying. Where they really went, it's complicated. I don't think taking a hike is overly complicated. Tell me. I pressed after I lit a cigarette. My voice had grown cold after my sister died. I only cared about finding out the cause and nothing more. I think my harsher demeanor unnerved a lot of people. They went to Rosethorn Cabin. It's a local legend around here, she started. My sister had always liked ghost stories and urban legends. She didn't know what she wanted to do as a career yet. The last I heard, she had held down a few part-time jobs while trying to figure out the rest of her life. Had she come here because she wanted to write about legends? She had always been a good writer. 10 years ago, two children and the mayor went to their cabin late in the season. A massive snowstorm hit. From what I heard, there was a misunderstanding where they were staying. It was a month before anyone figured out where they were stranded in the cabin. when a small rescue team arrived. They found the son in good health, but the daughter was nowhere to be found. She let the implications sink in. It was a tragedy that didn't need to happen. But what does the death of a girl 10 years ago have to do with my sister? So, no offense, but I don't care about what happened to them, I harshly said. After what happened, the mayor tried to pay people to keep quiet. The son went back into the woods to live in the cabin. Some people say it was to get away from people accusing him of a crime, but others claimed something else. That he, became a Wendigo. She almost looked embarrassed saying the word. I've heard about them in passing. I wasn't into myths as much as my sister. All I know about them is that you could become one if you ate human flesh. And for some odd reason, they all had antlers and a lot of images people made of them. Why do they think that beyond the suggestion he ate his sister to stay alive? Did he start acting weird? Did he look weird? I questioned. He disappeared from the cabin after the first winter. People claimed to see a pale, thin, wild man living in the woods. A few campers had gone missing only to have their bones to be found, but with the marrow gone, as if something had eaten it. She paused to rub her arms as if she had gotten a chill. She also started looking around, expecting someone to be listening to our conversation. I didn't believe in the whole Wendigo idea, but I would consider the Rosethorn's son to have gone insane. She pulled out some papers from her back pocket and held them out for me to take. I'm sorry about your sister. Her death should have not happened. The mayor has since become a powerful politician. He's done everything in his power to ensure it's not well known that his son might be living in the woods killing and eating people. Even if you find evidence that proves your sister was murdered by a local Wendigo, you may never be able to get the truth out there. Still, I made you a map of how to get to the cabin. I hope you find what you're looking for. I thanked her for the help, truly glad someone in this town was willing to tell me the truth. She soon left, not wanting to be caught. People of this town thought there was a monster in the woods. They had been tight-lipped for my safety. I finished smoking, and then went back inside the small hotel room, ready to try and get some rest. I would need it for the hike the next day. I checked out in the morning. I wasn't the best at reading maps, but this one was simple enough to understand. The trails up to the cabin weren't marked. They also had been grown over due to lack of use. I needed to take a few breaks because my pack was too heavy. My job had always been in an office. I wasn't used to hiking. My body hated every moment, but I forced myself to carry on. I found the cabin a few hours before sunset. My stomach hurt from stress and hunger. I did listen to the ranger's advice. A small handgun that had once belonged to my father was holstered at my hip. We had only gone shooting together once. After my sister disappeared, I went to the range to practice. Each time, I imagined the target to be a bear or a shadow figure attacking her. It helped me improve quickly, but it didn't bring her back. No matter what I did, she would always be gone. The cabin was barely standing. The wood had rotted the elements without being maintained for so long. For some reason, the forest was quiet. The closer I got to the cabin, the less I heard the birds in the trees. Dark clouds covered the sun, giving the entire area an unsettling look. Soon, droplets of rain started to come down. I didn't plan on staying inside the cabin. I went inside the cabin to avoid the rain, wondering if the weather would get so bad that it would force me to sleep inside for the night. The floorboards creaked with every step. Soon the rain and wind outside got very heavy, It felt like the small cabin started to shake. It was a tiny space. There was only a living area with a small bathroom. No furniture remained. Only a rusted, useless stove. At least the fireplace still worked. It took only a few moments to get a fire going. Then I took out my flashlight, trying to see better in the gray light. The wooden floors were less rotted inside. There were some odd spots where someone had scrubbed them as clean as the old wood could be. I got down low to run my fingertips over old scratches on the floor. Tracing my fingers over them, I realized they looked to be made by something with four claws. For an hour, I crawled over the floor, desperately looking for anything. A scrap of fabric, or some bloodstains? I needed proof that my sister had been here. Just before I gave up, my light caught something between the cracks of the floorboards. I used my Swiss Army knife and carefully lifted the small object out from between the two boards. When it was in my hand, my heart nearly stopped from pain. I held a small silver letter charm. When my sister had graduated, I bought her a bracelet that you could add charms to. The first one was an L for Lexi. She hated going by Alex, but as a big brother, I used her full name to annoy her. I gave her the bracelet to apologize for not respecting her name and promised to be better. I expected to get emotional finding something of hers. I'd been almost numb since I heard about her disappearance. Even thinking her name almost felt like too much. By now, I only felt a deep heat inside my chest. The charm was put away somewhere safe. I didn't care if whatever was in the woods was a Wendigo or a guy who had just lost it. I was going to kill him. The storm outside picked up. At some point, the thunder and wind made the entire building tremble. I didn't want to be inside if the roof came down, but I wouldn't be able to see if I went outside. My stomach was too stressed for dinner. For hours, I was facing the door with a blanket to try and keep away the early spring chill. I planned to stay out here for as long as my food held out to. I didn't need to wait that long. When the storm started to die down, an odd smell came into the air. I buried my nose into the blanket, trying to avoid it. It grew so strong my eyes started to water before I started to get adjusted to it. When I was younger, a trash bag broke when I tried to take it out of the can. Inside were some freezer-burned steaks that had thrown out long ago with some other food waste. This smell was similar, but much more pungent than days-old rotten food sitting in the summer heat. Since the rain died down, I could hear the footsteps from outside getting closer to the door as the smell grew. My fingers tensed, ready to draw my weapon. So very slowly, the door started to creak open as it did so. A tall, thin figure took a single step inside the cabin. My eyes had long since adjusted to the dark. Because of this, my body froze in fear seeing what had just entered the cabin. He wore scraps of dirty stained clothing. The lips were torn away, revealing pale gums. This person had no muscle mass and looked to be a walking skeleton with a thin layer of skin clinging to their bones. Long, dirty fingernails gave the bony hands a dangerous appearance. For a moment, the eyes appeared to glow white, causing my heart to skip a few beats. When it met my eyes, it smiled and inhaled a rancid breath. I snapped out of my trance. Within a second, I threw off my blanket and started firing. Even in the dark, I should have hit him at such a close distance. I lost count of how many times I pulled the trigger. Dark blood that appeared black poured from three bullet wounds on his chest, and yet those long legs covered the distance between us, showing not an ounce of pain. It fell on me. I kicked, threw punches, and did everything I could to get the vile creature away. To my horror, it started laughing. My arms were pinned down by strength it should not possess. I never felt so scared and helpless before. "You smell like her," a low voice rasped. I felt as disgusted as I was angry. I hated this thing with every single fiber. Amused, he brought his face closer. The stench was almost overwhelming. Thick blood dripped onto my clothing, soaking through. Strangely, it felt ice cold. This terrifying creature couldn't be natural.
"Are you jealous?"
he spoke through rotted teeth.
"You loved her, and yet I was the one to eat her, to have her to be a part of me forever. Don't you wish it was you?"
I shut my eyes, trying to force back the sheer rage. A chill ran down my back as my mind thought of something I'd tried to hide from. That I had nothing left of my sister. Everything she left behind didn't feel like hers. Not even the charm I found. She was gone from this world, and I couldn't seem to find anything to hold on to. A sound came from myself I first assumed was a wild animal outside. I forced everything into my arms to throw off this creature. It tried to recover and claw at my face. In my fury, I lashed out and bit down so hard onto one of its fingers that my teeth ripped it off. I spat out the foul thing, the blood almost like acid in my mouth. He reeled back in pain long enough for me to grab the blanket. In one swift moment, I had tossed it over the creature's face, blinding it long enough to grab the pistol I had dropped in the earlier struggle. Pressing it to the creature's skull under the blanket, I fired until it was empty. More dark blood started to soak the material. With burning lungs, I crawled away, waiting for the thing to move again. Surely it was dead. It needed to be dead. And yet it sat up, blood-stained blanket still over its face. Was I just seeing things?
"Do you still love her?"
It spoke in a gargled voice.
"Shut up," I hissed. "She's still here."
It raised pale thin arms as if trying to offer something. I shook my head, trying to refuse what I was seeing.
"I love you because she loved you. I took her into myself. We can be together. Don't you want that?"
Rage boiled over. A heavy-duty flashlight sat waiting on the floor next to my pack. I grabbed it in a blind rage. The first impact against the creature's skull painfully ran up my arm. After that, I don't remember much. Not how many strikes I had brought down. Not when my flashlight broke when I switched to my fists. Or when I had broken my fingers from punching down as hard as I could. All the while, that monster laughed. I eventually collapsed, body and mind worn thin. When I woke, the light of dawn kept through the dusky windows. For a moment, I thought what had happened had been a dream. When I sat up, I found the beaten body of the creature where I'd left it. I considered burning down the entire cabin with the body inside. My hands were so ruined from the beating that I couldn't light a fire. Instead, I dragged the body into the woods and then kicked the leaves to cover as much of him as I could. When my hands recovered, I was coming back to set a much-needed fire. The hike back was brutal. Either I hid my broken hands well, or the owner of the motel didn't care. I knew I couldn't go to the hospital for my injuries. I just collapsed in the motel bed, trying to fight back the pain long enough to rest. A few hours later, a knock at the door dragged me from my nightmares. I almost didn't answer it. Just in case there was something wrong with my credit card, I opened the door, wondering if I was going to be kicked out. Instead, Ranger Dan was on the other side holding a first aid kit. He silently walked inside. I let him work on the cuts and broken bones and was relieved it wasn't as bad as it felt. There were two sons, you know. He started not looking up from his work. The oldest son wasn't at the cabin with his younger siblings. He blamed himself for what had happened and killed his younger brother. Then the strangest thing had started to happen. He grew sickly and distant. Soon, he left town for the cabin where his sister had died. We all knew something wasn't right with him. But we didn't know how bad it was until the bones missing the marrow showed up after some hikers disappeared over the years. I chewed on my cheek, tasting blood. These people had known for years about the monster in the woods, and they had done nothing. My sister, my dear Lexi, was dead because of that. I sat grinding my teeth in silent anger. "Are you heading home or somewhere else?" the ranger asked in a serious voice. At first, I didn't know what he meant. I'd killed what had took my sister away, but I didn't feel as if I had a home to return to. It would be impossible just to go back to my regular life after this. He spoke again, and his next question made my body turn cold. "Are you hungry?" I was starving, which was to be expected because I hadn't eaten much in almost 2 days. This hunger was different. It hurt so deep down inside it should be impossible, like a black hole that had opened in my stomach. "Why did you never kill what was in the forest?" I asked in a shaky voice. For once, he answered my question. "It can't be killed." He finished up with his task and left the room, not even looking back. Once he was gone, my body started to shake. I was cold. So damn cold. No amount of hot water from the shower helped. Something was wrong with me, and I didn't want to admit it. "I'm going back inside those woods. I need to burn a Wendigo." But I didn't want Lexi to have died without anyone knowing what had happened to her. I may not be able to come back out of those woods. Honestly, I would like to believe my mind snapped from the intensity of what had happened. But didn't people say crazy people don't know they're crazy? I knew the vast empty hunger was insane. I knew this cold running through my body wasn't natural. And I know sane people don't start chewing layers of their lips. I'm scared of what I'm becoming. Crazy or a Wendigo. Either way, I loved my sister, and fire should solve this problem before I pass it on to someone else. My brother is missing. He has been gone for a better part of 2 years. This wouldn't be unusual for Gary, though. We grew up together, separated by only a few years. He was always the adventurous one. Courageous, brave, and intelligent. The worst combination for an older brother. Everybody loved and admired him, and I lived in his shadow. Some people would be resentful, but Gary was a character who raised those around him. I always knew he would end up making a positive difference in the world. When he told me he was going away for a few months the summer of my senior year, I wasn't surprised. He was involved with a statewide operation which led to the seizure of a large amount of narcotics. He was an investigative journalist, and had spent months working from the inside to build a case for the local police. The next big case was another year undercover, working to tear down an arms dealer. The group were supplying and fueling gang wars, profiting from the lives of men killed by the weapons he put in their hands. He told me some details over drinking one night over the holidays. He didn't say much until late into the night. He told me how involved he needed to get into the position to know the head of the operation. Things he didn't like to reminisce on for too long. It was that same night that he told me about his next assignment. He was working on bringing down a worldwide organization who arranged big game hunting trips for seedy individuals. I met him a couple of months later, and he told me he was leaving the country to meet up with this group. That was the last I'd heard from him until today. I received an email this morning from an unknown sender. The subject title said, "For the attention of the big fella." I normally would have deleted these on receipt, but the title caught my attention. Gary had always called me the big fella since I'd passed him in height at 15. I am about an inch taller than him. It wouldn't be considered the big fella by any means. The email contained a text file and journal detailing his time spent with the group. The text file just said the following. "I don't think I'm going to make it back from this one, big fella. The latter is why I had reached out to you. I'm trying to track down his location from any clues hidden in these files. Unfortunately, I have to piece together the story from fragmented documents. I'm hoping one of you may be able to help me locate him. May 5th, 2022. Last week, I received the notification to meet in a small town in North Dakota. It was addressed to Mr. Jonathan Martley, the alias in which I'd been communicating under. The letter was stamped with a golden view at the head of the page. There was a list of essentials such as camping equipment, warm clothing and hunting equipment. Food would be provided on the site before departure. There was a highlighted asterisk beside hunting equipment. It said, if bringing your own weaponry, rifle and sidearm must be compatible with .308 and 9mm caliber respectively. Weapons will be provided on departure if requirements cannot be met. The request felt strange to me, but I knew this group was very exclusive in admission and presumed it was part of their procedures to remain anonymous. The final part of the note stated the next part of the trip would be confirmed on the day. Our meeting point is situated on the outskirts of a forest. The town seemed abandoned other than the people from the Venators, Latin for hunters. A mix of men and women equipped in military-grade gear, quite heavy duty for a single hunting expedition. The main spokesperson for the Venators was a broad man called Crane. He wore a dusty black cowboy hat pulled down to his eyes. His right cheek had three prominent scars running towards his top lip. "I'd like to thank you all for joining us on our first great cryptid hunt. This adventure will bring us in contact with the most prestigious prey known to man." I wasn't sure what he meant by cryptid, but the other 10 people who seemed to be joining the party didn't look too confused by this. "I'd just like to remind you all that this hunt is partaken at your own risk. I'm presuming you have the necessary precautions in place if something were to go wrong." A slight murmur of agreement from the crowd allowed Crane to continue. "This is your last chance to pull out. Once I name our first intended target, there is no going back. Please return to your vehicle and leave if you have any doubt about your commitment." He eyed the group intensely, waiting for our response. When no one backed away, he smiled. "With that, we are bound to the hunt." He raised a fist in triumph. "Go collect your ammunition from the table to your left. Silver bullets are the only thing that could take down a Wendigo." The group set out as the sun reached its peak. Crane, the only member of the Venators, The others were to hold down the base camp and continue to our aid if the need arose. They were also arranging transport for the next trip to Ireland. Four members of the gang split off to the right. A hushed but frantic discussion, barely audible. Marco, the son of an Italian superyacht distributor, was accompanied by his partner Lola and two friends, Antonio and Michael, all of whom were reassuring Lola that this trip was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to see the magical creatures walk amongst us. I was unsure how anyone could describe a Wendigo as magical from the stories you would hear about on the internet. My expectations for this hunt had reduced dramatically. The thoughts of uncovering a huge illegal hunting enterprise had tethered out, as I realized we would be hunting a planted elk with a soundbox attached. It's hard to comprehend how the Venators have managed to pull the wool over the eyes of so many wealthy and prominent figures. For the sake of my own cover, I know I will need to play out my role in this trip, but I'm hopeful that I may depart this before the next destination. Where is the next leg of the trip, by the way? I called out the crane, who led the party as we broke through the tree line. Ah, yes, I knew I was forgetting something. He turned to address us. The next target is a mythical siren who calls out to announce the passing of loved ones. A banshee? Joshua asked in a thick Texan accent. He too adorned a cowboy hat, but his was polished and new. You got it in one, Mr. Williams. Crane clapped his hands enthusiastically. You hear that, Junior? We're heading to Ireland. Joshua clapped his son on the back as the two discussed the terrain they may have to deal with while hunting a banshee. Joshua Jr., or JJ as he would be known, was a spitting image of his father. Albeit only about half his size, JJ needed every bit of his belt loop to keep his trousers above his ankles. As night fell, we made our camp in a clearing that Crane had spotted. We'll take turns on duty tomorrow night, if it takes that long. Tonight, I'll let you get some rest. No need to be the hero, Crane. Each one of us is experienced enough to keep a fire going. Crane dismissed the remark with some reassuring words on how he was well-rested and would enjoy the tasks. That seemed to settle Joshua as he felt there was no questioning about his abilities. I took out my notepad to scribble down my thoughts of the day so far. I was running through the ideas of how the Venators were concocting this fraudulent trip when JJ approached. Are you working on your checklist? He asked as he sat down beside me. No, just journaling the day. I like to get my thoughts down while they're still fresh. My response didn't seem to register with JJ. Me and Pops have most things checked off already. Lions, elephants, cheetahs, even a grizzly or two. JJ seemed to be reminiscing as he asked, Have you ever encountered anything of this kind before? Not even the slightest. It was an honest response. I'm aware of how much it would cost to get involved with the Venators, and JJ and his father had paid double. I didn't want to be the one to break the news that what we were searching for was no more than a dud. We saw something like this on our farm a couple of years back. Kept terrorizing our cattle. Tore some of them to pieces, it did. He looked over towards his father. Pops didn't know what to do. He shot the son of a gun damn near 10 times. It just kept coming back. Ended up having to call Mr. Bolton. He gestured to another member of the group who sat alone cleaning his rifle. Caleb Bolton was a dark-skinned man with cat-like eyes. He had his head shaved to the skin. A tree trunk-like neck was in proportion to the rest of his body. Mr. Bolton came late one night and set off in the darkness. The next morning, he came back covered in blood and deep gashes. He walked right up the paw and said, It's been dealt with. It just walked right off. Pop slipped him an envelope worth more than all the cows on the farm. He went off into the distance, leaving a trail of blood in his wake. I looked over Caleb, wondering what brought a man like him here, only to notice he was staring right back. The night wore on with nothing to report. We settled in and went to sleep as Crane looked out into the forest. I woke up late into the night as a sharp stick I missed nearly punctured my lung as I rolled over. I could see Crane sitting by the back of a tree, face illuminated by the glow of his cigarette. "Can't sleep, Mr. Marley?" Crane asked as he fished out another cigarette of his pack and handed it to me. "You can call me Jonathan," I said as I lit the cigarette. I sat down beside him, looking out over the camp. "Will the fire not attract the Wendigo?" I asked, gesturing to the crackling blaze at the center of the sleeping bags. "No need to worry about that, Jonathan." Crane tipped the ashes onto a stone beside him and pointed across the camp into a dense area of trees. "He's been following us since we got here." Crane's words stayed with me as I lay awake. His demeanor would convince most that we truly were dealing with a creature of the supernatural. I left his side feeling as if we were the ones being hunted. Full of mixed emotions, I tossed and turned for what seemed like hours. My skepticism battled hard against the situation I had found myself in. The debate was silenced by a strangled scream that echoed through the encampment.
"Where's Locus?"
Eli, as she ripped out of her sleeping bag, grabbed her husband Levi by the shoulders. Levi gathered up his rifle and started towards the location of the uproar, calling out for his son. Caleb and Crane were already ahead of him. I followed after bringing the handgun I had under my pillow. Caleb and Crane split off in separate directions, directing each other through pointing and gestures. They encircled an area 15 feet from where I stood. Crane surveyed the area thoroughly as Caleb scanned the trees. "Something was here, all right, but I don't think it was your son." Crane looked at Levi, his face full of concern. Marco and Antonio came rushing towards us, the faces slick with sweat.
"Lucas is okay, he's just going on the toilet," Marco said, panting.
"He came back not long after you left. We weren't sure what to do, so we came to get you," Antonio said, hunching over from the extension. Levi let out a sigh of relief as he made his way over to thank the guys for bringing the good news. I turned the Crane to ask him what he thought could have made the noise, but the color had drained from his face.
"We have to get back now."
Crane pushed past us at full sprint, heading in the direction of camp.
"It seems we have been fooled," Caleb said, much more calmly than the situation deserved.
We raced through the trees, receiving nicks and cuts as we ran without hesitation. I was pulling away from the main group, just keeping pace with Crane and Caleb, my arms pumping like pistons working to their max. The two in front didn't seem to be putting much effort in their stride, yet they ate up the ground like a marathon runner on his first mile. They were discussing what they may find on our return, but I was focused on filling my lungs with deeper breaths to hear what they were saying. They burst into camp, frightening the four remaining members who looked perfectly fine sitting around the fireplace.
"Jeez, oh Crane, you frightened me half to death."
Michael was gripping his rifle tightly as the others shrank in behind him. Levi was next to breaking the clearing, overjoyed to see his family safe and well. Eli went over to greet him. As she stretched out her arms to take his hands in hers, Lucas let out a cry of panic. Her arm never made it far enough to embrace her husband. The Wendigo burst out from the shadows, grabbing Eli by the arm and tearing it off, and flung her down onto the moss-covered floor. She bounced with the force, but managed to remain cautious as the beast reared his fangs into her face. Michael aimed at the monstrous figure, but pulled his shot. The bullet struck Eli in the temple. On reflection, I believe it would have been an act of mercy from whatever gods looked down upon us. The Wendigo screamed in anger and flung Eli's arm towards us. It struck Lucas in the chest. His mother's blood left a streak across his shirt as it landed at his feet. His stomach emptied of any contents left from dinner. The Wendigo stomped towards us, true evil glistening in the moonlight. Levine managed to pull himself from his daze once he noticed the creature heading towards his son. He looked at his wife's corpse and pure rage boiled over. He tackles the Wendigo with all his might, knocking the beast back into the fire. It tripped over as its right foot caught ablaze. Levi fell on top of it and unloaded a clip of his pistol into the creature's chest. For every bullet he fired, the Wendigo tore off a rip of flesh. His chest was opened first, a mist of red spraying onto the night sky. His face was the next to go. Teeth were launched 10 feet in all directions. Levi kept firing through his brutal assault. As the hammer clicked empty, not much remained to identify Levi. His rage-fueled attack cost him his life. The Wendigo pushed the remains of Levi to the side and clambered to its feet. The silver bullets lodged into its chest were bringing this monster closer to its final breath.
"Steady now,"
Crane called out as he raised his sights.
"On my mark."
Lucas roared as he ran towards the Wendigo. He brandished a blade from its sheath with murderous intentions. He tried to grab him as he raised the blade for a killing blow. I could see what looked like a grin on the face of this Wendigo through the large gaping hole of Lucas's chest. The Wendigo had punched through, tearing his heart out in one swift motion.
"For fudge's sake,"
Crane said in disbelief.
"Fire!"
The forest erupted in a cacophony of gunfire as bits of Wendigo were torn apart. It crumpled to the ground, relishing in the delight to gain one more soul before it fell. Crane dropped his rifle and walked back to the tree where his cigarette once was. He picked up the tattered box which had been destroyed in the melee. I offered him one of mine as he sat by the tree soaked in the blood of many. "And then there was Seven," he said as he ignited the match on the striker box.